Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 4. Today we are doing something we haven't done yet on this podcast, which is going to be an interview with an interview. So Mark Pearson is going to join us as always, but he has brought along his Vice President of Research at Nepsis, Chuck Atzweiler, and we're going to talk today about the causes of terrible do-it-yourself performance. They do an enormous amount of research kind of behind the screen, behind the door of what you see as a client of Nepsis. And they do a lot of research on behaviors of investors just like you. So welcome, gentlemen, to the program.
Matt, glad to be here.
Chuck, are you there?
Chuck, you here?
I am here, Matt. Very glad to be with you as well. Thank you for reminding me, Mark. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, you know, it's our job.
He was doing research.
All right, Mark. Well, why don't you give us a little history about how you met Chuck and really what Chuck does for Nepsis?
Sure. So I've known Chuck now for probably, I would say we're going on 13 years probably. We have been on an investment committees together, and Chuck has been a part of Nepsis here for about the last 12 years, doing various roles in that time frame. Chuck's title, as you mentioned earlier, is the Vice President of Research. And as we often talk about the uniqueness of our investment process, this whole idea of investing with clarity, a lot of that stems from the uniqueness of the research that we provide to investors and the research that we do internally to help us make the right decisions for our clients, including the psychology of that. You know, as I've talked about in the last podcast, you've got the empirical data and you've got the behavioral data. The behavioral aspect of investing is just as important, if not, we believe, than empirical data. And Chuck puts together a lot of content with our team regarding that aspect of investing.
All right, Chuck, where do you get this research and why are you so passionate about this?
Matt, thank you for the question. Certainly, I would say this. I view ourselves as a funnel, meaning that our job is to constantly be honed in on information that's making its way through the airwaves. Every time I either read an article, I'm watching a news story, I'm thinking about how would one of our clients, how would an investor be processing this information? And we've come up with a way to examine that by delineating between the headline and the bottom line. And the more that I read, the more information I take in, there's a major difference between what is actually stated in a headline and what the bottom line of that article is. And to me, I get a great amount of excitement when somebody reads an article and said, you know, I didn't know that that's actually what was being said. That's one of the things that drives me, because I think there's misinformation out there, or at least the processing of that information is really different than what the client is taking from that headline.
Where does that come from, though? What is the motivation of the misinformation? I don't want to get political necessarily, but from an academic or a research standpoint, we all know that you have to read beyond the headline, but very few of us do. That misinformation that does sway our behavior, in your research, why is it there? And then I'm really interested in what in God's name you do about it.
I love it, Matt. All great questions. Certainly, you could take, and this is not to say that there's some sinister plot behind what journalists do. I think it's just a natural way of presenting a story. So the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads, creates eyeballs. If I make a bombastic statement in the headline, I have a greater chance of people reading it. And what we found is, yes, there's bombast in the headlines, but many times you actually walk yourself through that article, maybe even do some research underlying the data that's there, and you find something that's different. And I think it's our duty at Nepsis, with our middle name being Clarity, to bring that out. So that passion drives me. Again, I love when somebody reads something that we have either produced or, in essence, a document that we've sent out, and people say, I didn't know that. I get it now.
This, Matt, really is the fundamental component of what Nepsis really is and what we're about. This idea that the more you understand about what you own and why you own it, i.e., clarity, the more successful an investor you can be. When you don't have clarity, then fear can set in. You can have a dislocation of what's actually reality and what you are perceiving as reality. And we believe that certainly there's lots of psychological research on people's behavior out there, but investors by nature feel more pain than they do exuberance.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can paint the pain, get them engaged and they can connect with it, they're going to read it. And pain, in my opinion, uncertainty creates activity in the markets, and activity creates revenue, and activity doesn't necessarily mean that people are making the right decisions or best decisions because they're lacking clarity in that particular situation.
Well, let's talk about the distribution of that clarity. How do you take the headlines and the bottom lines? And when you're having your advisors, or Mark, when you're writing something, or Chuck, when you're writing something, how are you communicating that to uncover or remove that behavioral bias or that those behavioral blinders in order for people to see the real story?
Yeah, great question. So we have multiple outlets that we do that with. First of all, we've created quite, if you go to investwithclarity.com, you can find a boatload of our white papers. We have, so for the academic investor, if you will, the one who wants to go really deep into the process, we have created a multitude of white papers giving scientific data regarding the position of how important the behavior is in the process. We also have created shorter documents called The Compass. We have a blog site, investingwithclarity.com. We also have an internet radio show called Investing for Success. So we get on Facebook, we get on Instagram, we get over the internet. We have a vast amount of channels, Matt, that we use to engage the investor and, frankly, to engage our clients in helping them understand what's really happening with their money. As you know, most investors and, frankly, even financial advisors don't get the opportunity to interact with the person who actually makes the decisions regarding their client's money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they certainly don't get the opportunity to engage with the researcher, the person responsible for putting out research that people read about what we are doing here at Nepsis to enhance people's ability to invest and plan with success. So by using these multiple channels, a lot of the writing that I've done and a lot of the writing that Chuck has done, we have a couple other people on staff that do a little bit of writing. The whole idea is around the foundation of clarity, this idea of knowing what you own and why you own it, and the ability to understand that the more you know about what you're doing, the more logical and the more common sense the behavior you are going to have will be shown. And therefore, we hope, believe, think it should enhance your ability to invest with success.
I love the fact that you're hitting so many different mediums. I mean, you and I have talked about that offline, how it's so important to make sure that you're providing information at different levels in different locations so that people can find it and truly use you as the educational resource you are. But I want to ask Chuck a very pointed question, which might sound like a ridiculous question, but I know our audience is probably thinking this, which is, what are you researching? So you're the vice president of research at Nepsis. What does your day look like? Where are you going? What are you doing with that information? I mean, do you have an epiphany a day? Help us with really what goes on in Chuck's world.
Thank you, Matt. I love my job. Like Mark has stated many times, I'm doing what I want to do. Almost when that happens, you're in a state of almost like you're retired because you're certainly loving your work, which I do. I get up in the morning. I have a routine where I take in various websites just to see what the overseas markets have done. And just to look at the landscape that's out there, has there been any policies that have changed globally through government? But what I really look for, and I actually have a couple of staff members that help me with this, is to scour 100 websites to find stories that actually are written, again, by journalists, and to determine whether actually there is underlying truth in that, or is there something that I need to do to make a correction to that particular document. I'll give you an example. Mark used the word reality. Many investors, I think, live in a world where they don't have clarity, and they quite simply are fearful about the upcoming day because they don't know what they own and why they own it. A great example of this is the amount of money, tens of millions of dollars per year, that's spent on market newsletters where individuals purport to predict the future. Yet when you ask those particular individuals do you believe somebody has the power to predict the future? They, of course, say, no, I don't really believe that. Yet they will spend the money. Now, why is that the case? It's a form of regressive behavior. Think about anyone who's raised a child, and a child, many have fears of going to bed at night. They need to be soothed. So in essence, they ask their mom and dad to read them a bedtime story, which lulls them to sleep and their fears go away. Actually, when you train a child, the only way you're going to get them to recognize that there aren't monsters living under their bed or the boogeyman's in the closet is through tough love to show them that that's the case. You speak to a child psychologist, you rearrange their room, you have a light that's on that shows they're not there. Why am I mentioning this? The reason I'm mentioning it, adults will default to somebody who they think can predict the future because they don't have clarity in what they own. So when we read a story about somebody's major prediction, we look at the bottom to see, are they selling a DVD? Are they asking you to go to a website to subscribe to their newsletter? And we find most of the time there is an underlying motive for that headline being written.
See, I think, Matt, one of the things that I spend a lot of time leading Chuck, and, you know, because a lot of times I give Chuck the exercises of things I've seen or heard, and I want to dig deeper into them. So besides all of, let's call it the empirical data that Chuck looks at and his team looks at in terms of the economy and what's happening with the economy and what's happening with the markets and valuations, all that kind of scientific stuff, which people kind of just gloss over. I mean, the one big, most important question most people ask is, was the market up today, right? I mean, who cares if the market was up today, right? Because if you're a long-term investor, what a market does on a day-to-day basis really doesn't matter. But what we really think is the core of why there is, and I think I've told you this before, Matt, there is more cash on the sidelines today, M1 and M2, they call it, money supply sitting on the sidelines than there was at the bottom of the financial crisis. Today, there is more cash sitting there on the sidelines. And you have to ask yourself the fundamental question, why is that? Why is more cash sitting on the sidelines? And oh, by the way, markets are continuing to all-time highs. But when you turn on the news or when you go to the big financial websites, there's always talk, especially now when we've had markets continuing to hit new highs. We're constantly seeing we're going to have another Black Monday. We're going to see another Black Monday real soon like we had in October. We're due for a big correction. The economy is not doing as well as people think. The stock market's way overvalued, blah, 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 blah. And everything correlates to corrections, volatility, and stock markets. When the articles and the conversation should be, I own great businesses, let's hope for volatility so I can buy more of those businesses. And to put me at a place that enables me to do that, what do I have to do? You have to have clarity. You have to understand what's happening with your money. And so as we put together the things that we do, Matt, to help investors understand that, a lot of the research that Chuck puts together looks at lots of historical data, lots of studies regarding this, and the white papers are compelling, and there's a lot of great information investors can gather from that.
I love it when I walk into a financial services professional's office and CNBC is on. And then when I go sit down with the financial advisor, I will ask them a question, Mark, you asked last time, which is one of my favorite questions, you know, which is, you know, are you a money manager? And, yes. You know, they get squirrely and they kind of move around in their seat. And I say, you know, I don't really need you to answer that question, but you're trying to appear as if you are one.
Right.
And man, every time I walk in, the sky is falling. And Chuck, that's why I was kind of trying to uncover some of that with you, because almost all of the press, yes, it's clickbait. You know, they need eyeballs to make money, and I understand that. But goodness gracious, I mean, the sky isn't falling every flipping day, right? But they want you to think it is. And since we are bombarded with that, right? So the general public, your investors, and even your financial advisors that you work with at Nepsis are bombarded with this. Do you create, does Nepsis have like a shielding ability or something that helps block some of that stuff? Because instead of relying on that outside media, they're relying more on your research and your communication.
I'm going to answer that because that is one of the fundamental components of why we changed the name of the company years ago to Nepsis, Matt. This gets this is a little bit behavioral, but this is a little bit just common sense. If you've ever played sports, or if you have ever been in theater, or if you have ever been on any sort of team where there is, for a lack of a better phrase, a pecking order, or everybody on the team has a specific role. An investor's investment process and a financial advisor's role work together, as the financial advisor is the leader. They are the ones that should communicate on an ongoing basis with the investor to make sure these two fundamental questions are being answered. Number one, are my investments doing the best they can? Which, of course, is a general question, but we have, you know, how we have how we respond to that. But the second thing is, am I on track to have the kind of financial future I want to have? The financial advisor's role is to advise. If you are an advisor, you are therefore in a role of leadership. You are to be a leader. And in my opinion, what we do to help lead our advisors and clients is to continually and constantly communicate with the advisor and with the client. For an example, Matt, every Friday morning, we've done it for years. I don't even know how many years it's been. Maybe five, six? No, it's been, I bet it's been 8 years. We do a 30-minute portfolio update call to financial advisors. 30 minutes, either Chuck and or I speak to the advisors about the market, about companies we own in our position, to give them a level of confidence and a level of clarity that they can turn around and they can lead their clients with. And when you go to most money, when you go to most financial advisors, the ability to lead is what's what I'm looking for. Is you're disadvantaged because you can't lead if you don't have all the clarity. You can only lead, generally speaking. Hey, the markets are going to come back. You, people used to always say, Matt, and people still say today, during corrections. Of course, we haven't had a big one for a while, so it hasn't been said in a while. But when corrections come on, what's the most famous line they all say? You're in it for the long haul. You got to ride the storms out. Mm-hmm. You've got to stick to the plan. Don't worry, the markets will come back. But at the end of the day, the reality is the investor's not thinking that right now, because the psychology of negativity is five times greater than the positive mm-hmm. on an investor. In other words, let me say this. Investors feel five times more pain when they're losing money than the euphoria they feel when they're making money. So when they're making money, they almost feel like, it's almost like Matt saying, they expect there to be making money. Mm-hmm. You know, they expect their portfolio to be going up every year. Well, who told them that? If you want your portfolio to go up every year, put it in a CD or a savings account.
Right.
And your dollars will go up. But when you're an investor, that's a long-term process. And so financial advisors, because they don't necessarily have either the personality or the clarity in what they own and why they own it, they can be inhibited by their ability to lead clients during those fearful periods.
Chuck, I want to ask you a gear switching question here, which is, how do you control your bias?
Matt, great question. I love it.
Hey, tell them what you are. Tell them you're a recovering technician.
I'm a recovering market technician, yes. I use it ever so slightly, yes. But Mark dissuades me from certainly doing that. You ask a great question. One of the major biases, behavioral biases, I should say, Matt, that those in our business, portfolio managers, analysts, and the like, suffer from is something referred to as anchor bias. Anchor bias, picture a large battleship or a 10-story cruise ship that comes into port and needs to be anchored. Obviously, the size of that requires a massive anchor. The anchor goes into the floor of the sea and holds that ship at bay. An anchor bias, from a standpoint of the behavioral component or deficiency, I should say, is where I would come up with a thesis and new data is presented to me that should actually persuade me to change my thesis. I look that data in the eye and I turn my back to it. That happens very frequently. That's one of the reasons why, as I had spoken earlier, that coming out, and Mark mentioned this, out of the 08 crisis, everyone is looking for a redo of 2008, when the probability of that happening is 2%. It's highly remote. We also suffer from something called myopic loss aversion. Myopic short-term loss aversion, as Mark said, I don't like losses. In essence, we extrapolate what recently happened to reoccur in the future, when actually that percentage of probability is very low. So those would be the two biases that we check ourselves at the door every day. We have an investment committee that meets on a Saturday morning, five of us with all different disciplines. or challenging one another. If we have anything that's set in stone, if there's new data, we certainly need to consider changing appropriately.
One of the things that we tell people, to just piggyback off that real quick, Matt, about this idea of losses, we say this often, you haven't lost anything until you sell something. People have been taught and trained to look at their monthly statements and they see their portfolio or see their portfolio down.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the famous line, I made money this month, I lost money this month. You don't make or lose anything until you sell an investment. And so this is one of the reasons why, and we'll talk about this on another show, the sell disciplines. The sell discipline is equally important as your buy discipline, but people don't talk about that. And the fact of the matter is you can look at your portfolio going up and up and up and up, and that's what happened in the 90s before the 2000 peak, and people thought they were making lots of money and it was just going to keep going. But the fact of the matter is you don't make any money until you sell those investments. So one of the things we want to tell investors and continually reiterate it to them is you don't make any money and you don't sell, you don't make any money and you don't lose any money until you actually sell that particular investment in your portfolio. It's extremely important behavioral aspect that people need to understand.
What am I missing? I feel like I've tried to ask you both some good questions. When it comes to the causes of the do-it-yourselfer really having abysmal performance, what else should our listeners know?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, to be, you know, I'm biased, obviously. I think it's very difficult to do it yourself as an investor. I think there's a lot of moving parts to investing that most people don't even know or understand because there is that empirical component we've talked about, the scientific component, and there is the behavioral component. And the reality is that people will do investing themselves. And if they're going to, this is the mantra of why we talk about the idea, Matt, that the fundamental core most important aspect of attempting to be successful at investing is understanding what you own and why you own it. Hence, nepsis.
Mm-hmm.
Have nepsis. And that should, no guarantees, but it should enhance your ability to make successful investment decisions. Let me just add with this, end with this. Look, I will say to investors over and over again, when market corrections come, at what point in the correction do you feel that pain? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 20, 30, 40? And that helps gauge a little bit about what their investment risk tolerance is and what their investment objectives are, right? And many times people will say, well, it's 20%. I really start feeling it. And I want to go to cash, or I'm really anxious, blah, blah, blah. And then I say to them, well, let me ask you this. If you knew what you owned, if you knew you owned Johnson & Johnson, or you knew you owned Honeywell or Microsoft or whatever it was, and they went down 20%, how would you feel? They'd say, I would think it's a buying opportunity. That's what most of them say.
Yeah, totally.
Because the company's not going to go away. Okay, so if that's the connection, if that's how people really feel, then that just lends credence to the idea that the more you understand about what you own and why you own it, the more you can hopefully enhance your investment success, i.e. nepsis, clarity.
I also want to highlight, first off, go to the Nepsis website, because when you scroll down on the About Us page and you look at just the level of education that just Chuck has, and if you honestly as an investor think that you can pull off what this guy does full time with an MBA, a CIMA, right, a CFP and a CMT, and by the way, those are all very, very difficult designations and educational requirements to get. And if he still meets with the investment team on Saturday morning to double check and make sure he's not being biased, I think you really need to rethink all of this. So Chuck and Mark, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Glad to be with you, boss.
Thanks, man. All right. This was episode 4 with Mark Pearson and Chuck Atzweiler, the vice president of research at Nepsis. We talked today about the causes of terrible DIY or do-it-yourself performance. Thank you very much. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure that you click the subscribe now button below. So every time we do a new podcast here, it'll show up on your listening device. Thank you and have a great day.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.